regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company, where unfortunately we are talking about some serious infringements today. In New Mexico, SB 17 advancing out of the Senate Judiciary Committee last night. Zach Fort from the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association going to be with us here in just a moment to talk about the latest on this gun ban and gun dealer regulation bill. This is basically a two-part bill, right? So you've got, first of all, what would be the most sweeping semi-auto ban in the United States. SB 17 talks about extremely dangerous firearms, although it does not define an extremely dangerous firearm. But it does prohibit the sale of all centerfire semi-automatic firearms with a fixed magazine capacity of more than 10 rounds, or all centerfire semi-automatic firearms with a detachable magazine, banned outright. Can't sell them. Current owners under the bill could continue to possess them for how long? How many sessions before that changes? Who knows? Two, three, maybe? This is something that New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has been trying to get passed for basically her at least 4 years. I think this is the fourth year that she has asked lawmakers to pass such a bill. They have not done so in years past, but this may be the year. It is not a foregone conclusion. It is not a fait accompli. If you are a New Mexico gun owner, don't give up hope. You're going to hear from Zach Fort about what you can do to try to stop SB 17 from getting to the governor's desk. Take a look and a listen. Zach, thanks so much for coming on the program this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, Virginia and New Mexico right now are the two states where a semi-auto ban is on the table. And so, mm-hmm. You know, obviously paying very close attention to what's going on in both states. SB 17, not just a ban on all center fire gas-operated semi-automatic firearms, but also has this dealer component as well, right? Mm-hmm. So a host of new regulations on FFLs. This was in the Senate Judiciary Committee last night. And as I understand, I was following the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association's Twitter feed. There was a substitute bill that was introduced. Do we know what's actually in that substitute bill now yet?
Bill has not been released to the public. We thought there would be. We were told to expect a substitute bill, but we don't know for sure what is in the actual substitute bill. It's yet to be released to the public. From my understanding, it is not substantially different in the actual content, what it does do is clean up a lot of language and things like that from the original bill, because the original bill was very heavily written by Everytown. The substitute bill incorporates more language from the New Mexico Department of Justice, the governor's office, to kind of make it more tenable with New Mexico law. So it doesn't really change what the bill would try to do, but it does clean up a lot of the very poorly written language that Everytown originally came with.
Okay. Well, so not good news for gun owners then in that substitute. This passed on party lines. I thought it was interesting. Well, I was watching the debate in the committee last night. I watched for about a half hour, and I just happened to tune in as one of the Republican representatives offered an amendment that would strip out the gun ban portion of this bill, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so Senator Brantley, Republican state senator, she offered an amendment that would strip out the rifle, the gas operated firearm ban component, also magazine ban, just completely strike that entire part from the bill. That she actually got one of the Democrats, Senator Joseph Cervantes, to go along with it. Ultimately, that amendment died 4-5, because, you know, you had the three Republicans and then joined by one Democrat, because it's a 6-3, six Democrats, three Republicans on that committee. So you have to kind of swing two Democrats to actually stop something in Senate Judiciary as it currently stands. And I will say the makeup of Senate Judiciary actually has been changing from year to year. It's a very different committee than it was 2 years ago. It's even different from what it was last year, but it's a very different committee from what it was 2 years ago. Because in the past, you know, 2 years ago, Senate Judiciary was a better wider committee that took bills more seriously. Unfortunately, with some of the turnover, some of these newer people they've brought onto the committee, they kind of seem to be taking their job of thoroughly vetting legislation less seriously. I mean, there's a lot of concerns that were brought by the Mexico Department of Justice about kind of what the bill seeks to do, but those concerns were largely pushed aside by Senate Judiciary last night. So kind of back to that vote, it would end up being 4-5. Kind of we're not able to get, you know, a second Democrat to join that, but it was really close, and I think it shows that, you know, there's still a lot of potential to stop this. We don't know exactly what that is going. We don't know if we have all the votes to stop all of the restrictions on gun stores. We're doing everything we can to stop the entire bill, but you may see going forward, this amendment was likely going to be brought up again, whether that's on the Senate floor or on the House side, if it's able to make it over to the House side. This is still very much a live bill. There's still a lot of changes that are going to be made on this. We're going to continue working on this. I know it was a disappointing vote from my perspective, you know, from going through my vote counting, looking at these state senators. I wasn't terribly surprised by the outcome of it. The entirety of the state senators on the Democratic side on this committee are from what we kind of call that central New Mexico corridor along the Rio Grande, where Santa Fe, Las Cruces, Albuquerque, where that's where you get all the progressive Democrats from. They all kind of hail from those three metro areas. And sure enough, every Democrat on that committee is from Las Cruces, Santa Fe, or Albuquerque. The Democrat votes we do much better with are tend to be the rural Democrats from northern New Mexico. They are not present on that committee. So there's still a lot of
work on the Senate floor.
They're absolutely present on the Senate floor. They're present on some other committees. Like, for instance, Senate Finance is where this bill died last year, because there's the finance committees in New Mexico are very heavily slanted towards the rural communities, just because they need to, for them, making sure they get their full allocation of money from the state, and it's not just being dominated by the larger metro areas, is an incredibly important issue for rural communities in New Mexico. So rural Democrats are very heavily present on the Senate Finance Committee. We're seeing if there's an opportunity to try to get this bill routed to Senate Finance. Senator Maestas, a Democrat from Albuquerque, he actually brought up in the debate last night that there does seem to be some pretty serious fiscal implications for this bill, for the enforcement of it. And so he seemed to think it should get routed onto Senate Finance. We would like to see that happen. We're going to see what options we have where, you know, I think the Republicans would like to see it routed there as well, because yes, there would be very serious fiscal implications. And that's a committee that would be much more friendly to us is Senate Finance. Okay. So we're going to keep working that angle as we can. We anticipate it will likely go straight to the floor, but we are working to see if we can get it routed over to Senate Finance.
Okay. But you know, obviously as you and I are talking here, you certainly don't sound like you've given up. You certainly don't sound like this is a done deal.
Absolutely not. We've stopped a lot of bills before. Looking at if it does make it to the House side, the vote's going to be very, very close on the House floor. I'll just say that. This is absolutely not a done deal. I think everyone, both sides are counting their votes right now. Like I said, I don't think either side was terribly surprised by the outcome based on the current makeup of Senate Judiciary right now. The Senate floor is going to be close too. We're going to see what we can do there. I know there's going to be some Democrats who are likely going to vote against it on the Senate floor. Can we get enough? I don't know for sure yet. We're also trying to see what we can do, because we're making the point that, you know, this does have some very serious fiscal implications. We made that point last night in our testimony in Mexico Shooting Sports Association testimony on the bill. This has very serious fiscal implications on this bill, and yet you're not sending it over to the committee that deals with these very large fiscal implications, because there's no appropriations attached to this bill. This is very much not a done deal at all. There's less than 2 weeks to go. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. So this is absolutely not a done deal by any means.
Yeah, from a pragmatic standpoint, it's wild that there's no appropriations attached to this, given the regulatory regime that's placed on FFLs here, right? The reporting requirements, the security requirements, that has to be enforced somehow. I suppose it could be left up to local law enforcement, but doesn't the bill actually reference the state Department of Law Enforcement?
Yes, the state Department of Justice, it would be on them to determine what is and is not gas operated. They would be on them to ensure compliance. It would be on them to inspect. And, you know, part of the part of this to me is, you know, we have a very serious issue with enforcing current laws in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And my question has always been, it's like, if you can't enforce the current laws, what makes you think you're going to be able to enforce this law? Because you go to one of these, you know, Senate finance meetings where, you know, they talk to all these different groups. What does everybody say? We do not have enough funding for prosecutors. We do not have enough funding for law enforcement. We do not have enough funding for judges. Even before the bill, before the Senate Bill 17 was a bill to add another judge in the first judicial district because the caseload is so overwhelming that they can't get to everything. They're having to drop cases. Like, that was the literal bill before this. And now we're saying, oh no, we're going to introduce a whole new regulatory regime, a whole new slate of laws, no appropriations attached. And we're going to enforce this instead of all the other laws that we don't have the capacity to enforce currently. I mean, that was the bill immediately before this, was the first judicial district, which incorporates Santa Fe and some surrounding counties, saying that they don't have enough capacity to hear all the current cases.
I mean, listen, this is crazy legislation on a number of different levels here. But if there are New Mexico gun owners who are watching right now, who should they be contacting? Should they just be reaching out to their representative, just their senator?
Reach out to your representative, reach out to your senator. We've got less than 2 weeks to go in this. We're past the halfway point. Just be reaching out to them constantly, calling their office. You know, call their office, ask like, hey, are you talking to constituents? We'd love to meet with you. Even if it's just 5 minutes, I'd love to just get your ear on this. Yeah. Encourage people. Like, this is absolutely not a done deal by any means. There's still a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of votes to be held on this bill before it would get through. We absolutely have the ability to stop this, but it's going to take everybody stepping up over this next less than 2 weeks until the session's over.
All right. Yeah. You mentioned, I mean, this is a 30-day budget session, supposedly dealing with budget issues. And mm-hmm. yet, once again, we go back to the lack of appropriations here. Is there a crossover deadline? Does SB 17 have to pass out of the Senate by a certain date in order to be considered by the House?
No, it doesn't. And it's very possible that if we get some good amendments to really water down the bill, strip out the rifle ban on the House side, it would actually have to go back over to the Senate side again for concurrence. You know, a couple of years ago, they did a ban on firearms in polling places. We actually won an amendment on the House floor to exempt concealed carry permit holders such that they would be able to continue to carry at polling places in New Mexico. We won that amendment on the House side. Then they sent back over. They had, you know, that bill had to go back over to the Senate side because they had to ratify that amendment to the bill on the Senate side, so they didn't entirely lose the bill. So, but that also goes to show, you know, that was relatively recent. The House is not that different from when we won that amendment to exempt concealed carry permit holders such that they could still carry at polling places. Don't think that this bill is an absolutely done deal. This big bill, we've won stuff on the House side before, some amendments, stopped some bills there before. We stopped bills on the Senate side before. This is absolutely not a done deal. It's disappointing. I mean, trust me, I've sat through I don't even know how many committee hearings and watched people pass bad gun control bills before. But at the same time, it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, it happens fast, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. One committee hearing doesn't mean everything is wrong, is done. We just got to keep working.
Absolutely. Zach Ford, again, I appreciate you carving out a couple of minutes of what is, I'm sure, a very busy day. I would also encourage folks, if you want to follow what's going on in New Mexico on X, New Mexico Shooting Sports Association is NM_SSA. They're keeping folks up to date there. Zach, thanks for everything you're doing to protect our Second Amendment rights there in the land of enchantment, and look forward to talking to you again. Hopefully with some good news here in the
near future. Thanks for having me on.
My thanks to Zach for joining us on the program. We'll probably be talking to him again maybe next week. Again, 2 weeks left in the session in New Mexico, so things are going to be moving quickly. And, you know, we are keeping an eye on what's going on around the country. California, for instance, we're going to try to get Rick Travis on the program next week from California Rifle and Pistol Association, because when we talked to Rick, I think it was back in December, maybe it was early January, he said, you know, he'd been talking to Democrat lawmakers, or at least their offices, and basically every one of them told Rick, like, look, man, our budget crisis is so bad, we don't have the money to try to put any new gun control laws in place. So Rick thought this would be a relatively quiet session. We did see a bill introduced this week that would establish a permit to purchase requirement in California. Again, the onerous background checks, the 10-day waiting period, background checks for ammunition sales, and then, of course, the hardware bans, you know, none of that's enough for California Democrats. At least one of them wants you to obtain a permit to purchase a firearm as well. I have no idea if this bill is going to get traction again, given the fiscal state of affairs in California. But I am hoping that we'll be able to talk with Rick next week, get a better idea of what the prospects are for this particular piece of legislation. We've seen a couple of bad bills deferred in Hawaii, sort of not killed outright, but they just, you know, sort of like, well, just shove these bills over here and then we'll kind of forget about them. One of them would have, I called it the Fire Ministry Extortion Act, would have required gun dealers to basically pay the state of Hawaii in order to sell their products there in the state. Another one, this was, I believe, Senate Bill 433, would have banned the open carry of any bladed firearm. You could be arrested, charged with a crime. It'd be up to you to demonstrate that the knife or a bladed arm that you were carrying is in common use for self-defense. That bill was shuttled off. You know, we've seen a couple of pro-gun bills as well. New Hampshire is talking about campus carry. There's a bill in Kentucky, I believe, that would allow 18 to 20-year-olds to exercise their Second Amendment rights more fully. But so far, you know, the big states that we're watching, and we are keeping an eye on every state, but, you know, the states where there really seem to be a lot of movement right now, New Mexico, Hawaii, and Virginia, certainly. And I don't want folks to think that I'm biased just because I live in the state of Virginia. But, you know, as I was talking with William Kirk from Washington Gun Law on Tuesday night during his live stream, he said, you know, he said, I've never seen anything like what you guys are dealing with in Virginia. And honestly, coming up April 16th will be my 22nd anniversary of covering Second Amendment issues on a daily basis. I've never seen anything like this either. Not just in terms of the number of bills that were introduced, but the number of bills that are moving forward, right? It's not particularly uncommon, particularly in, you know, blue states like California or New York or Illinois. You get a bunch of gun control bills thrown into the hopper, but then leadership says, you know what, we're going to run like these 3 to 4 bills, right? They pick out their big priorities. They kind of leave the rest aside. That's not happening in Virginia this year. Almost every gun control bill that's been introduced is moving. You've got the ban on so-called assault firearms and large capacity magazines. You've got permit to purchase requirements, 11% excise tax on firearms and ammunition, approved by the Virginia House this week, or a House panel this week. Next week, the bill imposing a $500 tax on suppressors gets heard in committee. There are, you know, other bills to establish a give back program where you can, you know, just hand your gun over. You don't have to wait for a buyback program. Bills to establish a gun control lobby work center. Right. I don't remember what the name of it is, but, you know, it's the Virginia Center to Protect Gun Violence, or, you know, not protect, but to prevent gun violence. And it's basically a jobs placement program for the gun control lobby. That's moving. The one bill in Virginia that has been punted to next session that I'm aware of, there may be more, but I'm not aware of any. House Bill 926, that was the bill, or is the bill, that would have banned, would have given localities the option of banning outdoor shooting on all parcels of land that are less than 5 acres. And it would have required, would have allowed counties to impose a requirement on parcels over 5 acres of land that any outdoor shooting had to be done in a manner that, prevented rounds from crossing property lines, which could have impacted hunters as well, not just recreational shooters. That bill, again, was kicked until 2027 by a House committee. That is the one bright spot so far in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So if you do hear me talking a lot about Virginia, it's not just because I live here. It is because really what we are seeing in the Commonwealth is truly unprecedented. An effort to turn a state with relatively good gun laws into, you know, East California or South New Jersey in a matter of months, in one session. and we really have not seen the likes of this before. So I think it is deserving of coverage, even if it wasn't happening in the place where I call home. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. Our good deed of the day, our recidivist report. I said a couple days ago, I restrict myself from checking the website CWB Chicago on a regular basis, because if I did, then every day our recidivist report would be from Cook County or the city of Chicago. So once a week, I allow myself to check that website. And sure enough, here we go. Six-time felon on parole, carjacked man during dating app hookup, prosecutors say. 30-year-old Deshaun Smith, by the way, 30 years old, six-time felon. That's an accomplishment. Charged now with vehicular hijacking following this incident, which happened early on December 21st. Victim told police he was using the dating app Jacked. Not familiar with that one. Around 5:40 in the morning to find companionship when he arranged to meet someone, according to court documents. Listen, I haven't really dated in 30 years, but that's just a whole new world for me. 5:40 in the morning, looking for companionship. Should be like asleep or getting ready for work at that point. And then you can find somebody else who's apparently looking for companionship. Anyway, this guy gets to the location where he's supposed to meet his proposed companion. And Deshaun Smith allegedly waved him down. Victim said he did not believe that Smith was the same person from the app profile. But despite that suspicion, he said, hey, come on, get in the car. Guess he was really, really hankering for some companionship at that point. Anyway, they drive her out for a couple of minutes. They pull into an abandoned lot. According to prosecutors, victim turns off his car. And according to a detention petition, the pair begin to discuss what companionship might look like. Yeah. As the encounter was about to begin, CWB Chicago reports Smith allegedly pulled away, told the victim he'd have to pay for his companionship. The victim indicated he did not pay for companionship and began rolling a joint. But when he turned back around towards Smith, which again, just I don't pay for that. Here, let me just offer you some drugs instead. Anyway, turns back towards Smith. Victim said he had a gun pointed at him. Fearing for his life, the victim swatted the gun away, fled the vehicle screaming for help, and then allegedly watched as the Smith climbed into the passenger seat and drove away in the guy's car. Police responded to the scene. They entered the vehicle into a stolen vehicle database. Officers later located the car. There was a brief pursuit, apparently assisted by a Chicago Police Department helicopter, but Deshaun Smith was taken into custody, identified by the victim in a photo lineup. And Judge James Murphy ordered Smith detained on charge of aggravated vehicular hijacking. The Illinois Department of Corrections revoked Smith's parole. According to CWB Chicago, Smith received four concurrent 12-year prison sentences for four separate armed robberies in 2018. 8 years ago. 12-year sentence, 8 years ago. Four 12-year sentences. But again, he gets to them all at the same time. So it's just one 12-year sentence, right? He had previously been sentenced to prison for narcotics in 2016 and gun possession in 2015. Under Illinois law, basically every time that you spend in jail awaiting trial, if you're convicted, that counts towards your sentence. And then every day that you are incarcerated, you get a day knocked off your sentence for, as long as you are not causing riots or assaulting corrections officers, things of that nature, you get your good time credit. So 12-year prison sentence, actually six. Four armed robberies, 6 years behind bars. I think that's a pretty lenient sentence, don't you? All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. You know, one of the bills that is still alive in Virginia is a storage mandate. It would require that Virginia gun owners with juveniles in the home keep their firearm stored in a biometric gun safe. Like that, no other option, by the way. It has to be a biometric gun safe, unless it's essentially being carried on your person. One of the problems with this bill, in my opinion, is that it, again, removes the parental choice about whether or not they want their kids to have access to a firearm. And I talked about this with William Kirk again during the live stream on Tuesday. Yeah, I've got five kids, four of whom are still living. And how I've stored my firearms has changed based on their age, right? Obviously, you know, from the time they were toddlers, I didn't want them to, you know, have access to a gun. But, you know, even when my kids were teenagers and, you know, like my my middle son was a social butterfly, had a lot of kids coming in and out of the house. You know, I made sure that my farms were not accessible to anybody but myself and my wife at that point. But I also taught my kids how to be safe and responsible around firearms. And there were times where I believed that it was appropriate for my kids to have access to a gun. If my wife and I were going to Richmond, Virginia for, you know, date night or something like that, we were going to be out of the house for 3-4 hours. When my kids got to a certain age, it was, yeah, okay, I want you, you know, if something, God forbid, bad happens, I want you to know how to get access to one of the guns that I own. And I know that you're going to be safe and responsible with it. I know you're not going to just going to play around with that. I know that you're only going to access those guns in case of an emergency, but I don't want you to be helpless and defenseless. And there are armed citizen stories that I have covered over the years of juveniles who've defended their family because they've been able to access a firearm. I don't recall this story. It happened last year, but the 16-year-old who protected his family is now being honored for bravery by his local sheriff. And yes, he protected his family with a firearm. It was last September in Clay County, Florida. Vincent Ciccone III was at home. Sheriff Michelle Cook says a crazed man randomly entered the home and attacked the family. Said a very brave young man grabbed a gun and ended the horrific attack. Sheriff Cook said, no award will ever bring his family members back, but we want this young man to know that he is loved and respected and that we are incredibly proud of him. Suspect in this case, Mauricio Vasco Lopez of Jacksonville, Florida, had just gotten out of jail on bond for cocaine and trespassing charges. He and his wife, according to police, left their home in Jacksonville around midnight on, September the 12th, maybe September 15th. He got out of jail 3 days earlier. And they're just driving around. They had car problems, so they ended up in front of the Ciccone home about 6:15 that morning. Lopez gets out, leaves his wife inside the vehicle. He then walks through the fenced yard, comes across an 18-year-old who was standing outside the home. Vasco Lopez then ordered the 18-year-old at gunpoint into the home, went inside with him, immediately shot 21-year-old Alona Peoples. He then encountered 48-year-old Vincent Ciccone Jr., shot him. 39-year-old Samantha Ciccone armed herself with a shotgun, but she was shot multiple times before she could pull the trigger. And her 16-year-old stepson was able to grab the shotgun and fire 2 rounds at the suspect. Ciccone, the third stepmom, passed away. An 11-year-old girl hid inside a bedroom. Other family members, an 18-year-old and 2 women aged 19 and 47, were able to escape to a neighbor. Peoples was in critical condition for a while. Ciccone the third's dad was treated and released from the hospital. According to authorities, Vasco Lopez had had several mental health crises and, again, had just been released from jail a couple of days earlier. So this was, you know, again, a terrible, terrible incident. But it would have been even worse were it not for the fact that Vincent Ciccone III was able to access that shotgun. And again, under Virginia law, I would say it's highly unlikely that his stepmom would have been able to access that shotgun as this crazed intruder is in the home shooting her family members. Would she have been able to run to the biometric safe? Hopefully her, you know, fingers aren't sweaty at that point. And access the shotgun. I don't know. But I say it's far from guaranteed that that would have been the case. You know, I am not trying to dismiss irresponsible gun owners who leave their firearms in a position where their young children can get a hold of them and hurt or kill themselves or others. But we already have laws on the books in Virginia that punish that behavior. This storage mandate that's making its way through the Virginia legislature, this punishes lawful gun owners. Again, this takes away the parent's choice to say, you know what, I believe that my 15, 16, 17-year-old is responsible enough to have access to a firearm in case, God forbid, somebody breaks into our home and I'm not able to get to it. I don't think that argument is going to persuade Democrats. I fully anticipate that this storage mandate is going to go into effect. And I hope that it is going to be challenged in court when it does. All right. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A Boston man who stopped to help and rescue individuals who were stuck inside a home on fire in Dorchester, a triple decker home. If you've been in the area, you know, basically it's a triplex, right? I guess not a duplex, but every floor of this three-story house or three-story building is basically a separate residence. A neighbor identified only as Antoine, who lives down the street, was driving by, saw the flames, and he stopped his car, ran out, kicked down the front door, and helped the residents inside escape. He said, "I just went into action. I don't know why." He said, "But I did it." He said, "I went to the back first. There was so much smoke and fire, so I went to the front door and I kicked the door open and I got the people out who were on the first floor, and then I ran up to the second and third floor, and it was coming down," he said. A woman named Haley lives across the street. She said she heard the sirens and screaming. She said, she just heard a bunch of loud noise, a bunch of people screaming and yelling. A lot of structural damage to the home. I don't believe that it is livable at this point. Of Fox 25 in Boston says that seven residents and one child are now actually left without housing. But again, thanks to Antoine's actions, while there was loss of property, there was no loss of life. And as he told Fox 25, he said, "I'm happy there's no injuries." And the guy, as I was coming up here just now, he thanked me for saving him and his daughter. They thanked me. It's got to be an incredible feeling. And again, putting your own life at risk to save others in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Antoine, I wish I knew your last name so I could thank you in full, but I do thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. As always, I want to thank you for being a part of the program. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, today, tomorrow, over the weekend. We are going to be keeping you up to date on all the latest legislative news, legal analysis. You know, we've got some court cases that are still, we've got a lot of court cases actually that are still moving through the judiciary. And we're keeping our eyes on what's going on in Congress as well. Hopefully, no more comments from the Trump administration denigrating our Second Amendment rights. We don't have to talk about Judge Jeanine Pirro or issue as Attorney Jeanine Pirro or anything like that. But we will have you covered on all of the news and information that does impact your right to keep your arms. If you like what you see, I would also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. No matter what tier of support you choose, you've got to be supporting the work that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I thank you for that very much. Use the promo code FIGHT and get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. Have a great rest of your week and a good weekend. See you back here tomorrow or Monday. And until then, be well, be safe, and be free.